Hello, welcome to Outdoors in Scotland. My name's John Burns, and this is my podcast for folk who like the outdoors in Scotland, or, well, pretty well anywhere for that matter. One of the great things about Scotland, particularly the Highlands, is the wide open roads we've got, and in many cases the lack of traffic and the way you can explore. Cycling in Scotland has to be, I think, some of the best cycling possibly in the world. I'm going to say it, possibly in the world. My guest today is Dave Barter, who's written his book Great Scottish Bike Rides, and he's here to talk about, well, how he got into cycling and what he gets out of it. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hello, John. Yeah, I'm really, really good. It's a little bit murky down here today.
Is it? Down here, as a matter of interest?
Well, this is the nuts thing. So the book's about Scotland, and I live down in South Devon. So it could not be logistically worse, could it?
Not really. That's a fair old cycle, no. That is, isn't it, really?
Well, it's because I love Scotland so much, but I can't quite convince my wife to move there yet.
Yeah, it's a bit of a wrench, isn't it? If you're moving to Scotland, you're not going to nip around to see your mates every other day, that's for sure. How did your interest in cycling and in bikes start out then?
Well, I have gone through probably the typical male phase. I've got to the age of 28. I was in Birmingham at a conference in a lift, and it had mirrors on every wall. And I looked in the mirror and I could see a 360 view of myself, and it was not pretty at all. I was bulging out over my trousers in 3D in every direction.
All
and
right.
I thought to myself, yeah, I really need to do something about this. I got into running, believe it or not, not right. Cycling initially. I became obsessed with running and went from an unfit smoker to competing at a really decent level for the Royal Mail, where I worked at the time. And I loved it. I loved being outdoors, and I loved running on the trails. And then one day playing football, a friend of mine, who's probably not as much a friend anymore, kicked my leg out from underneath me and ripped my cartilage.
Oh, wow.
I ended up in hospital. A consultant came and saw me and said, we can fix that, but you're not running anymore. I woke up on the operating table and chatted to him, and he said, what I would do if I were you is I'd try cycling, because it's going to strengthen your quads.
Right.
And so because I've got this kind of obsessive nature, what I did is I bought myself a bike, started riding around the countryside in Wiltshire, where I lived at the time, and became utterly obsessed by it, and went from a casual rider to a garage with 13 bikes in it, to riding Land's End John O'Groats, competing in events and doing all sorts of stuff.
You really got the book badly then, did you?
and it got worse, because in a similar period I formed a business with a mate of mine, and we'd been bought by a larger company, and I went from a scruffy git in a shed to wearing a shirt and tie and having to go to board meetings. I realized it wasn't for me, and so I resigned and spent a year and a half writing a book about cycling around Britain.
Right, having to do a lot of cycling in the process, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
Must have been hard, must it?
Well, the you know, as any cycling author will tell you, the worst thing is you make all these plans. You think, I've got this really great route. I'm going to do it that weekend or that day. You pack the van, you drive up there, and then the weather turns against you, a closed road appears, or your van breaks down, or something goes wrong with your bike, or you've forgotten a bit of your camera. And all of those things have happened to me, and many, many more.
This is your fifth book, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I've written two route guides, a couple of books about my own experiences with cycling, and I've also written a book about the history of the cycling year record. People may or may not be familiar with a rider called Tommy Godwin. Mm-hmm. And in 1939, Tommy Godwin broke the record for riding the most miles in a year with 75,076 miles.
Wow.
Divide that by 365 and you get 220 miles a day.
So
I heard about this, and I thought, has anyone else done this? And I dug into the record, and I found that it was this forgotten record, and there was this history going all the way back to the United States in the late 18th century of these riders trying to ride the most miles in a year. And so I wrote a history of that record called The Year.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't know. There are parallels actually in mountaineering. The occultist Aleister Crowley, he once held the world record for the fastest ascent of a 20,000 foot mountain in Mexico. Rates of ascent were records that were kept in those days. So that must have been the same with cycling.
Absolutely is the reason why the cycling year record took off was because for the sponsors, for the bike manufacturers, their riders were out there day in, day out, getting press every single day of the year, and also getting their bikes underwritten as being high mileage machines. And it was a different age. Today we market to cyclists by showing them shiny things and new electronics and say it's going to make them go faster. Well, in those days, they like to play on reliability a little more. And if you've got a rider, Tommy Godwin was sponsored by Rally at the end of his record. And of course, Rally did huge amounts of press with obviously Tommy and their bike in the shot, talking about how reliable it was.
Well, I suppose that's an interesting point, really, because I think these days we're not exactly a throwaway society, but I'm guessing years ago, people would invest, in the period you're talking about, people would invest in a bike and that would be their bike. That would be it. They'd have to live with that bike for years. And if it had to be reliable, is that true?
That's absolutely true. It was a different age, and the manufacturers knew this, but they were selling probably a lot more units because people would get a job and they'd aspire to buy a bike, and more people were cycling to work because there were no cars. So how did you get to work? Well, you either cycled or you got on a tram or you walked, and so any working class lad or lass, they wanted to save up their money to get their first bike.
I think again it sort of links in perhaps with the big explosion of people going to the outdoors, which was between the First and Second World War, I think, because transport became more available. And also, I think there was legislation that meant that people had holidays. So that's led to not only explosion in walking, but I think also in cycling too. Am I making that up, or is that right?
No, you're absolutely correct. And one thing that I always like to remind the motorists of is that it's absolutely true, is it led to an improvement in the roads because more people were buying bikes and more people were out there cycling. And so the roads had to be improved because the age of the horse was dying away. Cars were only for the rich. So the road network has the booming cycling to thank for
I never knew that. That's really amazing. So it's really the
it.
cyclist who proved it.
Carlton Reid, who's a well-respected cycling journalist, has written a brilliant book about this called Roads Were Not Made for the Cars. It's a fascinating history, and he's documented it really well in that book. I recommend it.
Oh right, because yeah. I mean, road surface quality is really important if you're cycling. I can speak as someone who's cycled through Edinburgh. And across some of the cobble streets that are still there. And I don't know if you've experienced that, but your jaw wobbles quite
It
a
does, yeah.
lot. Am I right in thinking that your book about Scottish bike rides is not, is that not actually out yet? Is that right?
It's on pre-order. It's being printed as we speak. I believe it'll be in the warehouse on the 23rd of June and out on general release in July. But
Oh, so it's imminent then. And
it is.
how did you go about when you were looking for what would be a good route to give to publicise? What did you look for?
So I, by profession, are involved in mapping and location.
Right.
So my business builds electronic maps, and I love maps. And I first came across maps when I was in the Cubs, and they've been with me all my life. And so I stare at a map, and I look at it, and I think, and I look at the contours, and I look at the water, and I look at the woodland, and I look at the tiny roads, and I think to myself, I wonder what it would be like to ride there. And so my route planning is honestly driven by curiosity. I mean, obviously there are some roads that you know about as a cyclist and some climbs you know about, and you try and stitch those into the routes. But what I did when I was writing this book is there were bits of Scotland that I knew, but I hadn't ridden in. And so I stared at the map and thought, oh, hang on, I can see a nice little route there. So I then packed the van with the bike and drive all the way up the M6, M5, M74, get out, ride the route. And sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. And I mostly won right in the book, but there are a couple of routes that I rode and thought, that's just rubbish. I can't put that in there.
Okay, so you covered what, 25 routes, is that right?
Yeah, we tried to. I tried to give the cover as much of mainland and the Isles as I could. So I've basically done a good spread of the whole of Scotland.
Right. Yes, I've seen your map. You've covered a lot of areas. In my experience of cycling in Scotland, there's a couple of things really stand out. First thing is there's a lot of hills. Is your book only for people who are really kind of sort of super fit?
No, it's not. You're right. There are a lot of hills in Scotland. But what I've done with this book is my first book, Great British Bike Rides, the rides were a lot longer. And somebody equated it to the Munros of cycling.
Right.
And
Okay.
I'd say what we've got here is maybe the Corbetts, yeah, that I've reduced the length of these rides. A couple of them I've actually done with other people and they've had no problem with it. I'd say there's only one or two where there are some climbs in there that are really, really nasty.
Be lacking a bar, is it?
That is in there, and there's a ride from Shiel Bridge that has got a stinker of a climb in it.
Oh yes, I think I know the one you're
Yeah.
talking about. Is that
It's
over
got
to
us.
Glenelg, by any
It
chance?
is.
Yes, I remember that ride. Yes, there was a lot of gasping and stopping from my point of view.
I'm getting old now. Don't forget, I'm nearly 60. So if I can do these rides, then I think other people can. And Rhett, you've always got 2 feet and push and taking the scenery.
My other experience of Scottish cycling is that it's in the summer in particular, it's lovely cycling along, but as you're cycling along, about, I don't know, 60 yards behind you is a large crowd of insects that when you stop, they catch up with you. I don't know if you had that experience, have you?
I have, but then you've just got to do 3 miles an hour to beat them, haven't you?
Yes, that's right, exactly.
This is where cyclists do have an advantage on the walkers. I've
Yeah.
spent a lot of time walking in Scotland, and I've been working on the Cateragh Trail. I've not done it in one go, but
Right.
I've done it in three sections, and I've just got to finish off the final bit. And yes, I've been caught out by the midges on the Cateragh Trail.
Yeah. Midges, what we call clegs up here, horse fires.
Oh,
I always
yeah,
think
clegs.
if in the summer in Scotland, if something isn't drinking your blood, then you're not really doing it properly. It's as simple as that, really.
I must admit that Scotland, for me, I spend most of my time there between September and May. And the reason I do that, the midges is one factor, but the main factor is the light and the landscape. And I think that in spring and in early spring, and in late autumn, where you've got the transition from the greens to browns and back again, and the light is lower, and there are less people there. There's not much traffic. The tourism has kind of died down. I just think those are the magical times to be.
Absolutely. I don't know what the word is for someone who hates summer, but I'm a somophobe or whatever. I'm not particular. Although I would say one of the advantages, one of the great things about cycling in summer is no matter how hot it gets, if you're on a bike, you've always got a bit of a breeze.
That's true.
So tell us what would you say is it? We have to rank everything, don't we? So what would you say is your favorite bike ride?
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. You can't ask me what my favorite. I can't pick a favorite child. Yeah, when I look at these rides, each one of them is a favorite given certain conditions. Yeah, so. The ride that I would go and do over and over and over again any time of the year is in the Dalhousie Hills and the Menai Pass, because I could always ride round it. It's got a classic climb in it that you can do in winter. In the book, there's photos with snow on the ground on that route. I've ridden it in January. I've ridden it in June, and so that's a classic for me. But then again, there's the ride up in Applecross that includes the Balak, and I commit what could be deemed a terrible cycling crime is that I advise doing it the other way round to normal.
Oh, right.
And
Okay.
the reason is I've ridden it so many times. Everybody rushes to ride up the Balach the classic way.
Yeah.
But I think it's more of a cycling statement to ride from the other side and then see the glory of
Yeah,
Loch
yeah.
Kissel in front of you and descend down and really take it in. So I kind of do
Yeah.
that one the wrong way around.
Oh, great. Well, you realize what will happen with your book now, don't you? These routes will become known as the barters, and people will tick them all off. You'll become the Hugo Munro of cycling. That's what will happen to you.
I will happily go to my grave with that. I don't do this for money. Anyone who's an author knows that is
Oh, really
the
not?
margin. Oh well, certainly in cycling guidebooks. When you live in Devon, you write a book in Scotland, it's very, very hard on the margins that we get to make your
I
money
bet it
back.
is. I bet it is. Yeah. So if someone was to aspire to cycling these routes, I mean, people are gonna be, I tell you what's going, people will be given this book at Christmas. They'll pick it up and they'll start wondering, could I actually do that? But if you're not a very experienced cyclist, what tips would you give people who wanted to go and have a go at these then?
Well, it's basically standard common outdoor sense. A little story I'll tell you is that my dad was a pilot, an RAF pilot. His rudder came loose on his plane one day, and it shot
Right.
up into the air, completely out of control.
Oh my God. Okay.
And dad managed to land it, and he won a bravery award and got it on the ground. And they said to him, "How on earth did you get that on the ground? It's impossible. It can't fly." And he said, "Well, in my quiet time, I think about everything that can go wrong with a plane. And I thought to myself, what would happen if the rudder linkage came off? What would I do?" And he thought, "Oh, I'd probably feather the props and try and turn and do this, that, and do that, and the other." And it's that preparedness. It's that going into something, thinking, what am I going to do if it goes wrong? Starting with your bike, yeah. What's going to go wrong on my bike? Well, you're going to get a puncture. The chain might break. Your gear shifter might not work. Something might start squeaking. You might need to adjust something. So, with your bike, make sure you've got your spares. Make sure you've got your tools, and make sure
Okay.
you've thought through and you know how to fix it.
Yeah. It'd be the wrong time to start watching YouTube, wouldn't it,
It is, and being aware that in Scotland you are a lot more remote than anywhere
Yes.
else. Yeah,
Yes, that's it.
you may not have signal, and it's also about yourself. At the beginning of a ride, the temptation is, it's when you feel your best, and so you go hurtling off, expending all of your energy, grinding away at the gears, thinking, yeah, this will carry on, and then 25 miles later, it's all gone.
Yeah,
If
it doesn't.
you're bonking, you're struggling, and you think, oh, I wish I'd taken it a bit easier from the start. And it's about pacing yourself and knowing yourself, making sure you're hydrated, making sure you've brought food, making sure you're not relying on something that could be shut. How many times have I got to cafes
Oh,
and seen the
yeah.
I've had everything from, sorry, we've nipped out for an hour,
Yep.
to power cut, to
Yes. Yeah.
business closed with no notice,
Yeah.
to it being completely full with a queue out the door,
Yeah. Oh, that's very true, actually. Just because there's a cafe there doesn't mean it's going to be open. That's fair. In fact, I used to live in on Skye, and the cafe in the square in Portree used to close for lunch. There you are. Yeah. One of the things I've learned about cycling in the Highlands is if you see a thunderstorm coming, you won't be able to outrun it. I have tried to do that on several occasions and failed every time. So that's my tip. So let's go. What about safety? What are there any particular tips?
Yeah, I think you need to be aware that in Scotland sometimes the road surface is not ideal,
Yeah.
and so you need an eye on the scenery, an eye on the route, and an eye on the road, because the road can turn a
Yeah.
nice ride into a disaster very, very quickly if you
Yes.
ride over a stone or into a pothole or something like that. So you need to be conscious of that. You need to be conscious of other road users, and sometimes pick your times. You need to make yourself very visible, and you need to anticipate, and you also need to not antagonize. Yeah. So if you're on a tiny single track road that goes on for miles and there's a car behind you, then for sure you have the right of way. But maybe if you get the chance, pull over and just let them go. And then the driver will wave a nice thanks and you won't have an argument with them.
Have you had an encounter with an errant sheep or something?
Deer are the
Yeah,
biggest
goodness.
danger. Riding around up in Tarbert, hugging the coast there, just whistling along to myself. I had a deer jump out in front of me, and luckily we missed each other, but something had startled them in a hedge, and off they went.
Oh, right. Yeah, they can do that. And they're also rather large as well. So you don't particularly want to collide with a deer, do you?
I've been in a cycling group where a deer has taken out the front of the group. Not in Scotland, but it does happen. They're very, very
Really?
skittish animals.
Oh God, yeah. They are, to say they're unpredictable is an understatement. They have this great habit of just leaping over a hedge and landing in front of you. That's one of the less appealing features, I would say.
I think the only other thing I was going to add was cyclists and runners and walkers and mountaineers just need to be world experts on the weather. You don't trust one forecast. Have a look at a few others. Look at the wind. Look at the weather. Lightning's predicted. Look at precipitation. A prolonged rain shower in the Scottish Highlands can make a day an absolute misery. You can get soaked, freezing cold. And then the next thing you know, the wind picks up and you're on the edge of hypothermia.
That's something I hadn't really thought about, but yeah, wind, my experience, wind can be an absolute, well, it can stop your wind, can't it? If it's going the wrong way, it can turn what is a reasonable bike ride into something which is almost impossible.
Well, don't forget you also create your own wind. So if you get wet and you're cycling downhill for a long time, the air's rushing past you
Yes.
and all it's doing is cooling you down and you're not moving your legs. It's much harder as a cyclist, and I know this from years of experience all over the world, to warm yourself back up if the conditions are wrong and the terrain's wrong. Whereas as a walker, you can jump up and down on the spot a bit or stride a bit, etc., etc.
One of the difficulties I've experienced is I live in Inverness and not far from Loch Ness, and you can cycle up into the hills above Loch Ness, and it's if it's a reasonably sort of I don't know, an autumnal day, and you find cycling up, you're nice and warm. But if it starts to rain, as you say, and you're coming downhill, really, really difficult to keep warm.
So living near Inverness, do you know Glen Kiltality near Tomatin?
Yes.
So I drove all the way up from Devon to ride Glen Kiltality in late April. And I got to the bottom of it and everything was good. And literally a quarter of a mile later, I encountered a foot and a half of snow. And
Really, that's quite extreme, even for there, I have to say. It doesn't normally do that.
that foot and a half didn't rebate. All the way to the top of the glen. So I basically drove from Devon to push my bike up Glen Kiltality. And
Yeah,
that's what Scotland
that would be
does
quite
to
hard going.
you.
What I like about cycling is you kind of get into a rhythm, and there's that sound of the wheels just. That rhythmic sound of the wheels. And as you say, you can really see the countryside around you. One of the good things about being on a bike is, of course, you're slightly higher than a motorist. So you're seeing more, really. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, it's a great analogy, by the way. It's probably one of the main reasons that I do it is I just love being in different places, and seeing different things. And sometimes I'll do a ride the other way around because you get two experiences. You get one experience one way, and then another experience coming around the other way. And I'm also nosy, so I'm looking over every hedge and in every window, and
Oh yeah. Well, if you like wildlife, well, that's one of the good things about being on a bike is you can see a lot more, and they don't seem to be disturbed by a cyclist in the way that they are. By a motorist. I've been cycling along Highland roads, and I've seen osprey taking fish out of lochs and things like that, and an otter. It's spectacular.
The ride at Ardgour, up at Loch Linnhe, there's a tiny little road that comes along the loch,
Oh
and
yeah.
I almost always see sea otters on that ride.
Yeah.
And I ride that section really slowly because of that reason. I'm disappointed if I get to the end of it and haven't seen an otter.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, there's not many places in Britain you can say that, really, are there?
No.
Not many. Anyway, it's been great talking to you, Dave. It sounds a really interesting book, and I'm sure there's a lot of great, some really nice illustrations in it, and some photos that I hope will inspire people to be as inspired by cycling in Scotland as you clearly are. So thanks very much for talking to me. I hope you don't get any more punctures.
That's great, John. I've really enjoyed it.
Okay, thank you. Nice to talk
Okay,
to you.
cheers.